Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, April 4, 2022. South Sudanese leaders sign a security agreement for sharing the command structure of the unified forces.
The civil population in this country do not have any guarantee that their leaders will implement this peace agreement. However much they are given chances again and again.
And Sudanese living in Juba are appealing to the ICC to prosecute the leader of the paramilitary group during Tuesday's trial at ICC in Hague.
If this man is confirmed criminal by the court, then he has to be punished because we need justice.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A security deal was reached Sunday by parties that signed South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement. President Salva Kiir's Sudan's People's Liberation Movement, former rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, loyal to first Vice President Riek Machar, and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance signed an agreement to share the command structure of the country's unified forces. The parties to the conflict in South Sudan were supposed to have established the unified army 3 years ago, but could not do so due to disagreement among the parties. The deal, mediated by the deputy head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, will see President Kiir give up some key positions in the security agencies to the opposition. Some civil society activists have praised the parties for reaching a deal to end months of accusations and counter-accusations. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The deal, mediated by Sudan, stipulates how opposition commanders will be integrated into the command structure of the country's unified armed forces. President Salva Kiir, First Vice President Riek Machar, and Vice President Hassan Abdelbaghi Akol also agreed to create the Unified Armed Forces Command within 1 week and to graduate and deploy unified forces in training camps within 2 months. Civil society activists say while they welcome the deal, they want the parties to implement it quickly. Bol Deng, executive director of Intrepid South Sudan, a local rights organization, told the South Sudan in Focus activists want to see action, not lip service, from South Sudan's leaders.
We do not have a guarantee, especially the civil population in this country do not have any guarantee that their leaders will implement this peace agreement. However much they are given chances again and again. They have failed many times, they have agreed many times, and they will continue to fail. So we do not have a guarantee that now they have signed this, they will implement it as they have signed it. We do not know.
South Sudanese lawyer Kenyi Yassin Abdallah says the deal on a unified command structure is long overdue. He expressed skepticism about whether the parties will implement the deal.
What I need to see from the parties is to start the process of unification of the forces by graduating them without any conditions of saying there is no available weapons or guns for them to be graduated with. Then after graduation, then unified forces must be deployed in war-torn areas to restore peace and security, to allow citizens who are displaced to return to their home with a hope of finding for a lasting peace in their own country.
The deal requires the three parties to share the command structure in all security agencies, including the Army, Police and National Security Service. First Vice President Riek Machar's spokesperson, Pok Both Baluang, tells VOA the parties have agreed to a 60-40% ratio for the SPLM in government and the opposition respectively in the Army's command structure. They also agreed to a 57-43% ratio in the National Security Service sector, with the SPLM in government having the larger percentage. The parties also agreed on implementing a matrix under which senior officers of the SPLM-IO and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SOA, are appointed by presidential order into the unified command structure within a week's time, and all unified forces graduate within 2 weeks. Martin Abucha, the SPLM-IO representative who signed the deal on behalf of his party, says the deal should step up the implementation of security arrangements.
Not everything is perfect, but we want to say that we want to move the country forward. We, despite the challenges, despite the fact that not everything has been done, but what is important is let's move the country forward.
Barnaba Marial Benjamin, South Sudan's presidential affairs minister, says the deal will pave the way for restoring stability across the country.
This is a necessary step which will make us go through the important step of the graduation of forces as a bonus, and then the recruitment of more in the controlment side, so that Chapter 2 opens the route for a stable government of the Republic of South Sudan.
The deal, mediated by Deputy Head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, will see President Kiir relinquish some key positions in security agencies to the opposition. Sudan's Defense Minister Yassin Ibrahim, who accompanied Dagalo to Juba, spoke after the deal was signed.
We have reached and signed this agreement, and all the parties have accepted the deal. From this agreement, the parties will practically begin to implement Chapter 2 of the peace agreement, because the security arrangements are the core of the agreement.
The security arrangements is part of the 2018 revitalized peace agreement. At that time, the parties did not agree on how to share the command structure of the unified forces. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some women leaders in South Sudan have welcomed the deal reached by the SPLM-IG, SPLM-IO and SOA over the weekend to form a command structure of the unified forces. One women rights activist says the move signifies progress in the implementation of the peace agreement. David Monodanga has more for VOA from Juba.
Christine Kide, national coordinator of the South Sudan Youth Coalition, an umbrella of several groups led by young people that promote peace building, that took part in the 2018 peace talks, calls the deal to form the command structure of the unified forces a good first step.
The two parties coming down to agree that they should dialogue and sign an agreement, to me that is a positive sign that we are ready to make this peace hold, and we are ready to see that no matter the challenges, we can still sit down and get back to the drawing board and work things out.
Kide says she believes President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar are trying to give citizens hope that they can implement the peace deal in letter and spirit.
They are committing to their statements of we are not taking this country back to war, I quote. I feel they are committing to their words, and also they are trying to gain back to citizens' trust. So I'm seeing that it is positive, and I wish that we continue using that level of engagement towards the implementation or resolving conflict in our country and in our communities respectively.
Justice Ajonye Perpetua Paya, Acting Secretary General and Vice President of the South Sudan Law Society and legal advisor to the South Sudan Women Peace Security Monitoring Group, says the party should name men and women to the command structure.
Whether police, prison, wildlife, national security services, and the army, of course the command has to be balanced in inclusive gender. That one, it will be a little bit sustainable. I don't mean a woman can just be picked anywhere, but in this same system of the different institutions, there are women there already.
Paya says the parties must respect the agreement to appoint 35% women in all areas of leadership in government, including the command structure of the unified forces. Paya says this time, the SPLM in government should lead by example, because there are many experienced women in different institutions of the organized forces. One women rights activist, who prefers to be identified only as Gloria, says the government and opposition's agreement to form the unified structure of organized forces is the best thing that can happen for citizens.
We have been wishing for this to happen. Finally, the God has answered our prayer. since these two joint forces were not in peace, at least there will be a unity among the forces, which means if the government really goes on with this implementation, we will have no issue of saying these are the people from the opposition leaders disturbing our community in terms of war, unnecessary killing. There will not be any kind of blame because all of them are working in the same joint force.
Under the deal, President Salva Kiir will be commander-in-chief of the armed forces, deputized by First Vice President Riek Machar. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Some Sudanese diplomats have mixed reaction over General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan's threat to expel the UN mission in Sudan if they overstep their mandate. One diplomat says al-Burhan's statement made over the weekend might jeopardize Sudan's relations with the international community. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Khartoum.
Speaking during a military graduation ceremony over the weekend in Khartoum, Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, threatened to expel the head of the United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan, or UNITAMS, accusing him of overstepping his mandate. The comments come days after Volker Perthes, who is the UNITAMS leader and a special representative of the UN Secretary General in Sudan, gave an update on the situation in Sudan to the Security Council, in which he weighed in on the country's economy turmoil, violence against protesters, and priorities for a transition to elections. Responding to comment Perthes made, al-Burhan said, quote, "You have a specific mandate, and we said we are open for you to sit in talks. But for you to lie and try to manage the Sudanese people, we will kick you out." End quote. Muhammad Ali Atom, a former Sudanese ambassador to Scandinavian countries, says al-Burhan's statement could prompt the UN Security Council to place more sanctions on Sudan. He says former Sudan President Omar al-Bashir made a similar mistake which caused Sudan to suffer international isolation.
This could be like a bubble, kind of a threat, and he knows the value of the international, and it is not the fault of it is the Security Council who make the decisions. So even if Volker went, the Security Council will be more facing. I think now at least people try to the international community are trying to make to play a gentle game as Volker is inside.
Ali, who is also a lecturer of medicine at Al Ahfad University for Women in Omdurman, says such a statement don't help Sudan revive its shaky economy and instead put it under the category of failed states. He says if Volker and his team are expelled from the country, the international community will have more reason to sanction Sudan.
It will be a step towards the failure of the regime. So I don't think the economy can stand any longer for a long period without some sort of international community. And the international and even the regional community cannot work with as it's working now if the international community is not in the picture.
Sudanese diplomat Al-Tarifi Ahmed Kormeno does not see it that way. Kormeno says for the more than 1 year that the UN mission in Sudan has been present in the country, the situation has not changed because Volker has been overstepping his mandate. Kormeno says even though the international community will sanction Sudan, there is a need to revive the mandate itself.
Implications are there, sanctions are there, but everything is there. So Volker did not bring anything new to Sudan. Did not change anything, did not change any help or economic sanctions or isolation. We are already being isolated. There is nothing new.
UNITAMS was established on June 3, 2020 by United Nations Security Council Resolution 2524 of 2020. The new mission was set up to provide support to Sudan for an initial of 12-month period during its political transition to a democratic rule. Kormeno says he thinks Sudanese leaders need to do their homework and come up with a clear political roadmap to save their country.
We have more than 140 for the political parties and so many initiatives to be launched to reach an agreement. So as far as the UN representative or the delegate, I don't think there was so something successful out of this.
PERD's mission has involved holding a series of consultations along with the African Union aimed at coming up with a political solution following the military takeover in October 2021, which ended a power-sharing engagement with civilian parties. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the Darfur community living in Juba add their voices to the ICC trial of a paramilitary leader at Hague. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there such a thing as unconditional love?
The reason why I say it's there, because I've seen my parents and I've seen there is unconditional love in their relationship. Basing on the way like my dad treats my mom, the love is unconditional.
No, I don't think that. It's very difficult to predict human beings. So human beings are just unpredictable. Anybody can change at any time. So that's why I believe there is no unconditional love.
I'm one of the people who believe in real love, and therefore I believe in unconditional love. It exists. It's there. It's been exercised among people, and we have the ability to give unconditional love. So it's there.
Honestly, I've not been there before, so I don't know much about it, but a lot of things that I've seen people are struggling to love each other.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some Darfur communities living in South Sudan's capital Juba have welcomed the trial of Ali Mohammed Abdelrahman, who is due to appear before the International Criminal Court at The Hague tomorrow. One Darfur trader in Juba says Kushib killed many unarmed Darfur civilians and says the ICC should investigate him for crimes committed in Darfur. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
Trader Ibrahim Yahya Osmand, a Sudanese citizen from Darfur, says the ICC trial of Ali Mohammed Ali Abdelrahman, or Kushib, gives the people of Darfur hope for justice. Osman says the paramilitary leader and former leader of the Janjaweed militia terrorized and killed many people in Darfur. An estimated 300,000 civilians were killed in Darfur, and another 2.7 million civilians were displaced as of July 2015. Authorities say the key perpetrators were the Janjaweed and Sudanese government forces. Osman says the ICC should thoroughly investigate Abdelrahman, also known as Kushib, and force him to pay for his actions.
If this man is confirmed criminal by the court, then he has to be punished because we need justice. My people were killed in Darfur, and we want to know why they were killed. If there is no legal reason, then someone responsible should be punished. We need nothing more than that.
Another Sudanese citizen from Darfur, Muhammad Hussein, says some of his relatives were killed and his family displaced by the Janjaweed militia in 2003. Hussein says the ICC should not only punish Kushib, but arrest more suspects involved in the Darfur genocide and bring them to justice.
My family was forced to become refugees in another country because of the Janjaweed. My relatives were killed, so my family members had to flee from Darfur to Chad. Now, there are still refugees in Chad, and we have waited for justice since 2003. It's been nearly 20 years now as refugee because of Janjaweed. So I have suffered a lot, and I need to see justice prevail.
Salah Hamid, another Darfur community member in Juba, says the Darfur people have suffered grievous atrocities in the hands of Janjaweed militia for many years. Hamid says the world leaders should exert more effort to help bring justice for the Darfur people by holding the perpetrators of war crimes accountable.
Just we need justice. Yeah, that one is the best way. That when we need justice, that one is good. Yeah, a lot of people that are suffering, but if there's justice, the people are gonna be happy and everything will be okay. And the situation also will be better. So let's be for every human being, not only for Darfur. In all over the world, justice is good. Something is good. It's not bad. Yeah.
Kosheps faces 31 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity allegedly committed in 2003 and 2004. The ICC issued an arrest warrant for Kosheps in 2007. He surrendered in 2020 and was taken to the Hague, which confirmed his indictment the following year. The ICC says Kosheps was one of the most senior leaders in the tribal hierarchy in the Wadislia locality and member of the Popular Defense Forces, a paramilitary group. Kosheps is alleged to have commanded thousands of Janjaweed militias from August 2003 until March 2004 under the former Sudanese president Omar al-Bashir, who was ousted by the military in 2019. Kosheps is also accused of implementing the counterinsurgency strategy of the Sudan government, resulting in the commission of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur, according to the ICC. Kosheps is accused of personally participating in some of the attacks against civilians between August 2003 and March 2004, when civilians were killed, raped, and tortured. Elias Kapler, an official with the Human Rights Watch International Justice Program, told VOA recently the trial was significant because it is the first time that the leader is being held to account for massive crimes committed in Darfur. Kepler calls it a rare opportunity for accountability and says she hopes the Kosheps trial will be the beginning of achieving justice in Sudan for victims as well as the perpetrators. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
A senior UN official says South Sudan is facing the worst humanitarian situation since the country became independent in 2011. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The celebrations that greeted that joyful event and the hopes that were raised for a peaceful, more prosperous future have been dashed. More than a decade after South Sudan gained its independence, the country remains riven in conflict, crushed by multiple natural and man-made disasters, and unable to feed its population. UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, Sarah Besolo Nianti, says the number of people struggling to eke out a living keeps rising year after year. She says year after year, more people are plunged into extreme poverty and desperation. She says the appalling situation cannot go on. Something must change.
As much as we need $1.7 billion this year for humanitarian needs, we also need funding for development and for peace building, ensuring social cohesion and resilience. Humanitarian aid will not solve the problems of the people of South Sudan. We need to make sure we protect and support those who are most vulnerable, but at the same time, where possible, we need to start now to build capacity.
Nianti says it is important to empower those who can feed themselves. She does, however, acknowledge the primary need to provide food to some 8.3 million people suffering from acute hunger. She says aid also must be given to millions of people who have no access to safe drinking water and sanitation or to medical care. She says it is crucial to provide protection and psychosocial treatment to vulnerable people who are victims of violence, human rights violations, and gender-based sexual violence, including rape. While the emergency needs remain a priority, she says donors also should invest in development projects in relatively stable areas of South Sudan, which could benefit from such support.
We're talking about a humanitarian operation that will be structured in a way to increase the dignity that the people of South Sudan deserve. And that dignity will come with empowerment. It will come with us doing things differently, looking across humanitarian development and peace. Humanitarian response is necessary now to save lives. A development response is necessary to preserve the future.
Humanitarian Coordinator Nianti says investing in development in South Sudan and shoring up people's ability to become self-sufficient will loosen the country's dependency on international aid. She says the benefits of helping people to help themselves are undeniable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya's former Prime Minister Raila Odinga has accused leaders from the Rift Valley, where he was attacked by a rowdy youth, of an attempt to kill him. Kenya's Director of Criminal Investigation has summoned two members of parliament and a top county official in connection with the attack. Political analysts say the rising political temperature is leading to growing tensions and intolerance. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Last Friday, Kenya's former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and his team were stoned by unruly youths when he was attending the burial ceremony in Rift Valley of a former politician, Jackson Kibor. The youths broke the chopper's air shield and vandalized the cars Odinga was traveling in as he escaped unhurt. Speaking in a rally on Saturday, Raila Odinga said that the area leaders organized the youths to kill him.
We were at the funeral to console the community. Then the youth started hitting our cars with stones. The stones were raining on my car like rain. From there, I got to the plane and I saw someone hit the plane with a big stone. I was shocked. These guys wanted to kill us.
Kenya's Directorate of Criminal Investigation says that preliminary investigations indicate that the chaos were organized and coordinated by members of parliament in the area, Caleb Kositan, Oscar Sudi, together with Uasin Gishu County Assembly Speaker David Kiplagat. Uasin Gishu Governor Jackson Mandago has denied the allegations that he organized the youth to stone Raila Odinga and his team.
Everybody has a right to campaign in every part of this county. I cannot, as a governor and as a leader of this county and this country, be among those who think retrogressively. If I was a politician who just thinks about political divides and does politics of hatred and violence, I would not have given them my car. When they were alighting from the helicopter, it's actually my car that brought them to the bin. And my own car was stolen. So how can I be organizing violence against my car and my security?
This is not the first attack against the former Prime Minister in Rift Valley. It's a region believed to be the political stronghold of Deputy President William Ruto, who is competing with Odinga for presidency in the Kenya's August polls. Political analyst Martin Andati says Raila's allegations that the youths wanted to kill him are false and that many politicians experience the same political intolerance.
It's going to happen. You know, as we move towards the elections and as the political temperatures rise, there will be those kind of incidents. But, you know, based on the intel that they had, they should have taken precautionary measures to ensure that they stop that kind of incident from happening. As for the claims by Raila Odinga that they were targeting to eliminate him, I don't think that is because they pelted the chopper when he was not in. So how would they have targeted to kill him when he was not in? But by and large, it's not right.
A few months ago, Deputy President William Ruto's motorcade was stoned in Kisumu County, Western Kenya. Ruto has, however, apologized to Odinga following the attack.
Also take this opportunity to apologize to the Honorable Raila Odinga for what happened to him. It was really unfortunate. And if any of our party candidates were involved, we are going to take disciplinary action against any candidate who may have been involved in the violence that was meted out against the Honorable Raila Odinga.
More than 10 youths have been arrested following the incident and are being grilled by the police. Yesterday, Sunday, the accused legislatures from the area accused the Directorate of Criminal Investigation of selectively going after politicians allied to Ruto. Some observers say that all government machinery in the country supports Odinga, who has been endorsed by President Uhuru Kenyatta. Government authorities disagree with the charge. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now end the show with the song Wow Nar by Mr. Chu. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.